Let's start out with why. I think we already covered why the control of this region was so important to the U.S. imperialists and earlier also the British and French imperialists. And you see this whole area that is referred to by its geographic name, but it's become much more the Middle East. And there are also people who say the Arab world. But if you look at the map, that this map also includes Iran, which is Persian, not Arab, and Turkey, which is Turkish. And there are also a large number of Kurds living in this area. But you see the country that's right here at the edge, the eastern edge of the Mediterranean. This white section here is the Mediterranean Sea. And right here, can folks see it on the map? We're talking about this section right here. It's the eastern edge of the Mediterranean Sea, and it is, you could say, the door, the gate into this entire region. And that was historically true for a couple thousand years, actually, also. This is what is today the State of Israel, and what had been called Palestine, part of the Arab world, very much part of this whole region, but this is the road into it, and at a very decisive point coming from anywhere there, right? And so for British imperialism, it was a question of how to administer their entire empire. The way that was usually used was to take certain key points. For example, to control all of China, the little tiny city of Hong Kong was extremely important. It gave them a base into the entire region. In India, Calcutta, vitally important. You could look at why even the United States found the Panama Canal, both as a canal, as a juncture, as a cross point, but also so strategically important for their control throughout Latin America and their being able to rival the other imperialist powers of the day. So for British imperialism, it was how to have a stable foothold in the area. And in order to do this, it was a way how to create a foothold. And for this, the most oppressed grouping in Europe, who were the Jewish people, or one of the most oppressed, there was what was a very small idea at the time that had a very small following. But the ideas of Zionism was Jewish people saying, if we had our own homeland, if we had our own country, it would be a solution to the oppression that we face. Now, this was at a time when the large majority of the Jewish population were consciously socialists, were part of the working class that was developing throughout all of industrialized Europe at that time. And there was very little interest in this idea of Zionism, the idea of going to a part of the world where most European Jews would know nothing at all and which was not developed, and setting up a settler regime. But the idea of Zionism had a lot of support from the imperialist powers. And it was really the basis for what became the State of Israel. Now, our problem is time and how little time there is at this point for this class. But understanding Israel as from the very beginning, something that was wholly and completely to the advantage of the imperialist powers, and not to the advantage of Jewish people or Arab people of the region is what's very most important. And also understanding Zionism as an idea at the time that was linked to every other settler colonial concept. Its roots are no different than the settlers who felt they had a right to all the land in what's today the U.S., and that they could push aside the indigenous population wholly and totally. And there were settler, as different from the slave trade in Africa, but there were settler states in what's today Zimbabwe and South Africa, and also in parts of Uganda and Kenya, and where large European populations went and stole the land with the idea that they had some God-given right to it. And it was full of religious overtones at that time. You could look at most of the settlers that came from Europe to the U.S. expropriating the native population. That was that concept, that they could steal the land. Zionism was, from its very beginning, an idea like that. And it was in the interests of the imperialists to have some foothold in this region of a people who were not accepted by the other people. Israel was intended from its very beginning to be a settler state and a dependent state that was a military outpost. Now, I'm going over a lot of history. There's let me hand this around. It was supposed to be handed out earlier. It was famous quotes by some of the founders of Zionism. We'll have a few going the other way, too. Jabotinsky, the founder of what's considered Zionism today. Explaining that any settlement in Palestine would have to be a military occupation, that the Arab people would never willingly. He says, what people would willingly give up their land? That any kind of voluntary reconciliation or peace is impossible. And the third quote down, if we're looking at this in terms of paragraphs, he says, Zionist colonization must either be terminated or carried out against the wishes of the native population. Now, I don't have time to go over all this, and there are a lot of folks here who really have spent years understanding this question, who have fought in defense of the rights of the Palestinian people, which is the Arab population of Palestine, at that time. And I'm going to ask several people here just to take the floor and comment on this, because if we're looking at the election that just happened 2 days ago in the West Bank and Gaza, first we should note that only a percentage, and I don't know if it's even half, of the Palestinian people got to take part in that vote, because millions of Palestinians live outside the West Bank and Gaza. They live in refugee camps within 50 miles of what had been their historic homeland, but they had no right to take part in this vote. And the same for the Palestinian population that lives in what is today the state of Israel. So it was a small percentage of the Palestinian people who could vote, but it reflects this change we were talking about in the entire region. That if you were to look at what was Palestine 50 years ago and 60 years ago, it would have been a population largely peasant, largely illiterate, and that didn't yet have a consciousness of themselves. And that is the change that has come about. But before I go into Hamas and Fatah and all of that. Let's deal for a few minutes, because we're dealing with some both broad sweeps of history, but in order to make a point of understanding the changes that take place and the changes that are great cause of optimism for us. I don't know, Bill, if you want to comment on, as I say, there's several folks here who have spoken so often explaining the creation of the State of Israel and the Palestinian struggle and what it represents, that I want to take just a few minutes of that, of both comments of what it represents and how it was always, always completely tied to and dependent on U.S. imperialism, and before World War II, on British imperialism. I'm saying it was an enormous and historic error on the part of the Soviet Union to recognize Israel, and it was this idea at the end of World War II that they could somehow, by being part of the deal, that they could shape the direction. It was just, there's no reason, it did more damage to communists and the Arab world than any other thing that's ever happened. And it has also distorted, even within the U.S. and internationally, the understanding of Zionism in major ways. But it turned around also the entire, what I said earlier, the large part of the Jewish movement was progressive and socialist oriented in many, many ways, and played an important part role in the labor movement and so on. That mistake also had a lot to, rather than standing up to it, had a lot to do with misdirecting and making fervent Zionists Jewish workers who could have been won to internationalism, and instead ended up defending an imperialist scheme in the region. So there's nothing which was a greater mistake. Now, there are other things that the Soviet Union, their whole nationalist movements in the Arab world that did reach high levels of education and aid and technological aid and all of that, but nothing could ever undo that mistake. Right. That's exactly true. The Soviet system as a system gave enormous aid to liberation movements around the world, but it was a real error on the part of Stalin and the leadership of that time. But it's taking us in another direction, which I really want to talk about, both what Israel was intended to be by the imperialists and an understanding of what's happening in the region, what it is today. One thing it's important to remember in terms of this demand that about every current of the Palestinian movement has raised, of a democratic and secular state, but it was especially a demand of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine and for the left, the Marxist left in the Palestinian movement for a generation and more. There's more than enough room, as tiny as this country called Israel, once called Palestine, as small as it is, if every Palestinian who's been expelled and lives outside as refugees returned, and every Israeli citizen who's Jewish stayed, in other words, if no one left, the population density would be less than Belgium or the Netherlands. It's not that there's not enough room. And if the $15 million a day that the U.S. gives to Israel to maintain this artificially high standard of living and to fuel the military machine, which is really why Israel exists, if that went into giving space and land and development and education to the Palestinian population, this is a completely solvable problem. And it's just, it's one of those things where it's not just a socialist It's not just a solution that, it's a solution that could only come under socialism, because imperialism needs division, needs warfare, and they need a state which is that arrow into the region, that is that military base into the region, that has a population that feels forever threatened. However, the role that Israel was set up to play, and it's why, if we look at it in terms of this class today, the role it was set up to play, it can no longer play. The idea that by control here, you could control this vast region, that this was the sort of the land, but the aircraft carrier, the base for control of the region. And at one point, Israel functioned like that. Controlled, was able to invade Egypt and Syria and Jordan and Lebanon and bomb Iraq and really be the police for the region. And there were no U.S. troops that were needed to pacify and control and dominate this region. By financing Israel, they had enormous leverage in this region. And what's happened with Israel today, they can no longer keep their forces in Gaza. And in the West Bank, in order to hold on to these settlements that they build, this wall, as brutal as it is to the Palestinian people, it's also a sign of absolute weakness by the settler population, that they constantly are destroying and setting up more and more and more guards and walls and towers and security zones. And even with all of that, they're not secure at all and needing more and more and more money. So they no longer serve the purpose for which they were created. They're more and more bogged down. U.S. imperialism is more and more trying to find a solution for them and some compliant part of the Palestinian population. And this election that just took place, where even for a people surrounded, isolated, you can't travel 10 miles in the West Bank anymore without stopping about three times for a road check. I mean, it's really that difficult. The entire area is worse than an armed camp. And yet, even with all of that, they can't control a Palestinian population that has been disarmed, that's been broken up, that's been impoverished, and that has spent generations under occupation. So there is a change in the consciousness of the population that's taking place. Hamas may be a religious current, and this is where it becomes more complicated. And we could do a whole class on the different currents that there are in the Palestinian movement. The Marxist, the left current, that played a real role in the First Intifada, an enormous role with mass struggles and strikes, was singled out by the Israelis for enormous repression. And also the collapse of the Soviet Union meant that both ideological and material assistance that came from there was lost, whereas Fatah kept a certain level of U.S. and European assistance, and Hamas, where the political resistance went in, was sort of forced into, in many ways, the mosques, also had support from throughout the Arab world and also from Iran. So there are many different questions that arise in the political movements that were created and that exist today. But a current succeeding in the election who literally says, we will not recognize the state of Israel, even though we know this means enormous hardship. And anyone who's read any of the articles today, the average Palestinian person knows that in voting for Hamas, they're voting to cut off literally the paychecks that come, which is almost the only source of the economy. They know. It's not like they didn't think this through. The fact that they're still willing to do that means that Israel has an unsolvable, and the U.S., by extension, the U.S., has a problem they cannot solve in this part of the world. They really, you know, they're all in a crisis over this Palestinian election, in an absolute crisis, because what's the worst they can say? We're cut off all aid? We continue with the wall? What does that mean? That's no solution, and they know it. So anyway, it's related to their problem in this whole part of the world. They send in more and more troops into Iraq. They can't secure it. They can't stabilize their position.